This is Pat Perrier welcoming you to the latest episode of Zonta on the Move, here with Bonnie Winfrey and Lisa Pappas. Today's podcast guest is Alina Humphreys, and we're talking about community activism in action. Alina is a graphic designer, owner of Freewheelin' Designs, and an ally, a community warrior for those who need her. Her recent project was to update handicap parking signage in Bolingbrook. This involved communicating with village officials and rounding up volunteers from the area. She's here to talk about how we can all get involved. So, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. It's nice to see you. I was explaining before that we're actually more like Facebook. We've interacted mostly on Facebook.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of Facebook friends. So one of my favorite things to do is to connect people. In fact, when I was involved in the Portrait of a Graduate program for the VVSD, they had their stakeholders come in and help inform what qualities we wanted our students to graduate 12th grade with. And one of my partners in my small group at the table said that I should have a business card called An Architect of Human Connection, because that's my absolute favorite thing to do. That's how I ended up in so many ways and places. And I like to collect cool people and then introduce them to each other so they can magnify their impact, because I don't think any one of us should be working alone. I think that together we can do much more. So yes, that's always my goal.
Yes. VVSD, for those that don't live around the area, is Valley View School District.
Yeah.
So, because we have listeners all over the planet.
That is true. That is
so
true. Yeah.
Thank you. We want to make sure that they kind of have a geographical picture of what we're doing here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, okay. So I am 46 years young. I have three children, a 20-year-old daughter and 15-year-old twins. I've been married for 21 plus years now. I broke my neck training for AAU Junior Olympic Nationals in gymnastics back in 1993. So we're going on 31 years now. So from the very beginning, I think the best part about that was, as a 15-year-old, most people don't see you as having any kind of a voice. They don't want to listen to you. They don't think you have anything worthwhile to say. Almost immediately, people said, I want to hear what you have to say. You've been through something. And that had an impact on me. I thought, well, I have a responsibility to say something now. But I wasn't sure what I wanted to say. And as I've gotten older, my mom always told me, hey, when you get into your 30s, you're going to have power. A woman in her 30s and beyond just gets stronger and has more influence over a community. And I've been looking forward to getting older my whole life. And she was right. I think that very much so, as I got into my 30s and 40s, I found this need to act out and to be an advocate for people. And particularly for the last 6 years, I've been doing so many things.
You're one busy person.
I am a busy person. I'm the chair of Bolingbrook Pride and the founder of that. We started in 2018. I'm on the Accessible Community Task Force of Naperville. I'm also an original member of that since 2016, excuse me. I am the vice chair of the Arts Council in Bolingbrook. I am an advocate for United Spinal. I've done some work with National Organization of Women. I'm a volunteer for Youth Outlook. I could probably go on. But there's just so many needs. And my mom taught me, when you see a need in the community, you need to be the one to fill it, because that means it exists. Nobody else is doing it. And how can you know someone needs help and not do something?
Absolutely. So your business is graphic. Ladies, y'all can chime in.
It's okay.
Because I did this last time where I overtook. We could sit here and talk for an hour and a half.
Yeah, so, I could talk forever.
Yeah, me too. So you're stuck with us. So your business is graphic design work.
Yes. Okay, so I became a graphic designer. I kind of fell into it. Before my injury, I did fine art. And when I got injured, even as paralyzed as a quadriplegic as I am now, I was far more paralyzed then. So it was difficult to do artwork. There was a coach at the camp that I was at when I got injured who didn't really know me, but he was going to the USC studying computer programming. I was at the Rehab Institute of Chicago, which is now Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, doing my rehabilitation. He came by every single day. when I got out, he came to my house and he said, did you know you could do art on the computer? And I said, no. I mean, this was 1993. It was kind of the Wild West. And I had no idea. So he taught me a little programming. He got me a graphic design program. He said, why don't you try it? And I was hooked. So from then on, like, I started doing paid graphic design work maybe 2 years after my injury when I was like 17, 18 years old. And that's pretty much all I've ever done. As a quadriplegic who cannot work on site because of personal care needs, and people just won't hire you, you know, you have to kind of make your own way in the world. And this was something that I could do that I could sell remotely. And then say, luckily, COVID came along and people understood that you could work remotely, even though I'd been telling them for years. And so I've been able to increase the number of clients I've had, which is good. But yeah, I find graphic design is a great way to use my problem solving skills. That's what I tell everybody. I'm not an artist. I'm a problem solver. And I'm here to make your job easier, whatever that is. I only work for small businesses and places that are doing good things for the world. So that's nonprofits, it's school districts. I have a select few political candidates that I do graphic design work for. I'm incredibly picky, though. I have to feel like they should be in office and that they're there for the right reason.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
What's your favorite program to use?
Oh, I do Adobe. The Adobe
Suite. The whole suite.
So at every single day, all day long, I have Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, and Lightroom open on my computer.
Just, I cannot get the hang of InDesign. I am a Quark person.
Okay.
So that's ancient. That's like DOS.
I never did use Quark. I kind of hated layout programs.
Yeah.
I was an Illustrator, Photoshop girl.
Right.
And Illustrator I love, but InDesign now has kind of become one of my go-tos just because it makes it so simple.
Yeah. And it's so much has changed in that world that we have so many tools just almost hyper specialized for what we like to do. I mean, I'm just like a newsletter person.
Yeah.
I don't need all the bells and whistles, but you know, it's fun to watch people do that and see what comes out because it's gorgeous. You know,
I'm listening at you and you are just fantastic. You're positive and happy and everything else. I used to be chairman of the board for Easter Seals.
Okay.
So I used to deal a lot with people with disabilities. And in our audience, there may be someone there. How did you build yourself up when you got the energy? I mean, when you got the injury to where you are now? Look at you. You're prosperous.
Honestly, it's
Doing well.
It's never been a thing for me. In fact, when I was at the Rehab Institute of Chicago, they used to send me to the therapist all the time. They were like, why aren't you depressed? You need to be depressed. And I was like, why should I be depressed? This is fun. They're like, what do you mean this is fun? Like, I'm downtown. I get to see the lake. I get to go on field trips. I get people are coming to visit me constantly. I feel kind of like a celebrity. Like, I get to work out all of the time. I mean, I came from gymnastics. I was working out 8 hours a day. I was doing 7 hours of therapy a day. This was a good time for me. Like it was something to work towards. I've always been incredibly good at living in the now.
I see.
So I don't, I tell people every morning you wake up, you decide I'm going to live today or I'm going to die today. And if you're going to live today, then you need to get up and say, okay, here's my baseline, whatever that is. You don't have to be disabled. You don't have to have whatever happening. You could wake up with a cold. Okay. So today, this is the way that I feel. And I have to move through that and I have to prosper in spite of that. I also tell people, keep looking for the good because you'll find it. It's always there. If you allow yourself to see small things as good and find joy in small things, like if you can look at a ladybug crawling on a leaf and say, look at that color contrast and isn't she beautiful, and live in that moment, then you're always going to have good moments. Yeah, the bad moments are always there too. And people look for those and they find them. But you can kind of like just not look at those. And then life is pretty decent.
That is great. That is great. I see the positiveness in you. And I think it just started very early in life. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, when I was in my hospital bed, even my mom called it the no crying zone. So like if people would come to visit me, they start to cry, she'd spin them around and shove them out the door. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're not having that here. We're looking at recovery. We're looking at what can we do? We're not looking at, oh, this is so terrible. Like, I mean, whatever. It's a change, right? For me, it was easier to break my neck and be completely unable to do gymnastics than it would have been to damage my knee and not be able to perform in the way I wanted to. Mm-hmm. That would have been much more difficult to not be able to do something to the fullest. So this was just boom. Okay. New normal. Move on.
Yeah. What programs were you working with gymnastics?
Like who was my coach or whatever?
No, as far as like, were you on the balance beam?
Oh, I did all around.
Oh, you did all around. That's great. Yeah. That's
back then they didn't really have specialists. Mm-hmm. So like you were either an all around gymnast or, or you weren't going anywhere.
Yeah. So it's quite different when you watch it now.
One of the things that was really great about my injury is that part of what happened was I was going to a camp that wasn't my gym, wasn't a camp that I chose to go to. My mom happened to be a coach at this camp and my dad was dying of cancer and was going through chemo and couldn't drive. So I couldn't go to my gym anymore. So I tagged along over there so I'd have somewhere to work out. Well, there was a coach at this camp, a Russian guy who had not been properly safety certified, but people didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So he had me doing a trick I wasn't ready for, an unsafe matting surface. He didn't spot me. I under-rotated, broke my neck and passed out. And then he moved me and like shook me by the shoulders to wake me up, which dislocated my spine and pinched the spinal cord in between and made my injury a complete injury. However, following this, safety certification rules got more strict. Matting regulations got better. Like the sport that I loved, that I still love, is better, is benefited from what happened to me. So like, how small of a thing in the world is it for this to happen when it gave me opportunities? It's improved so much.
Yes.
Your outlook is amazing though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was brought up by a really tough woman.
Right.
Yeah.
Sounds like your family
get it.
Helped.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, make that for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. My mother had been through a lot herself and she's one of the toughest people I know. So like we kind of grew up in a buck up buttercup house, you know, get up, shake it off.
Yeah.
You can do it. And you know, the gymnastics world is like that. And it's just the kind of person I've always been. I don't know how to be any other way.
I can't even imagine what your daughters are like.
They're pretty
They're
spunky.
They're strong.
They're pretty spunky. Yeah. The 20-year-old is very strong-willed and big-hearted, but more militant than I am. Like, I'm a work within the system. She's like a tear down the system. But she has her heart in the right place. And the twins are very much more like me, community-minded, volunteer-oriented. And they all have such a wonderful passion for things that they care about. And it's beautiful. They go out into the world and I'm so fortunate people contact me. Your daughters are amazing. They're so kind. They do the right thing. They clean up. They, you know, they're articulate. Like, well, that's great. I mean, don't thank me. Thank them. They're making these choices. You know, they're going out there and they're choosing who they want to be in the world.
But you're modeling that behavior for them. And that's
fine. But you can model behavior for anybody and they don't have to take it on.
Sure.
They're choosing to do so. And I'm very proud of them.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the parking project?
Oh, yeah. So there is the Accessible Icon Project. Now, this has come about out in the Boston area. They created this new icon, which shows a person propelling themselves forward in a wheelchair rather than just sitting statically. I did not find out about that until January of this year, but it has been happening since, I believe, the early 2000s. Once I saw it, I was like, no brainer. We need to move forward with changing things around here. Mm-hmm. I don't think small. I was like, okay, we'll start with Bolingbroke. I went to the mayor and I said, this is what I want to do. And she said, sounds great. How do we do it? So they did a little research on, is this icon meet the international standards? How does that work? But starting in June, they actually paid for paint and the stencils and everything. All they had to do was provide volunteers to repaint all 46 municipally owned spots in town with the new icon and to re-sticker the signs so that it all matched. It's been wonderful. And now I've been talking to the park district, who's looking at redoing theirs when it's time to redo their parking lots, probably next year. I spoke with the library board just last week. They've already put up the new signs. They are redoing their parking lot in the spring, and they will restripe it with the new stuff then. I've talked to the Valley View School District, who is definitely looking at, they're like, I wish I had talked to you just a couple months ago, because apparently they restripe their parking lots right after school gets out.
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, it may not be until then. I'm like, hey, just so we got to work on putting it in the requirements of the contractor that this is what needs to happen. And they're absolutely on board. Now with the Accessible Community Task Force of Naperville, I'm also working on it there. I've sent the information over to John Noak in Romeoville as well. That's the mayor there. And I just had a meeting yesterday with Senator Meg Loughran Capel, because my next goal is to change the placards and plates here in Illinois.
Yes, I was going to say, we need to take this statewide.
At least.
Yeah.
I'm also talking to somebody in LA who wants to do it out there.
Yeah.
So it's been done in quite a few places across the country, but not enough as far as I'm concerned. I think the most important part about this is it starts a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Some people may say, hey, this is just, you know, a Band-Aid. It's just silly. It's a throwaway picture, right? Mm-hmm. But this icon is ubiquitous. It's absolutely everywhere. Everyone sees the icon for accessibility, and it says static.
Mm-hmm.
And it informs how people think about people with disabilities, even if they don't know that it does.
Yes.
We always used to joke, my kids and I roll up on top of the sign and sit there like completely still. And we would laugh and laugh because it's just not the way life goes.
Right.
And so this speaks to the agency of folks with disabilities, the power they have in their lives to move forward. And it starts conversations with lawmakers when you're talking with them about changing the sign. Oh, hey, wait a minute. Something else I brought up yesterday with Senator Capel was only 2% of parking spots are required to be accessible by ADA law. Right. Well, 15% of the population nearly have an accessible placard. So that's why nobody has a place to park who needs it.
Right.
So let's talk about how can we update that legislation as well. And then they start asking questions like, well, what other ways could we make life better? Let me tell you, I have ideas. But that's really the point. It's a visual reminder that starts people thinking.
I really like this. I am in Plainfield.
Oh, great.
And at the library, and our lot is under construction right now.
Sweet.
And it is a municipal lot. And I saw this and I thought, well, we will be doing this.
Great. So, well, I can absolutely direct you to where to get the stencil. More cheaply than you can buy it on their website.
Okay.
And also how to do the signs, stickers for the signs, so that you don't have to replace the entire sign. It's a lot cheaper to do that.
Yeah.
The stickers last like 5 years or so, and they meet the reflective requirements and stuff. So I'd be happy to help.
Yeah, this is wonderful.
Thank you.
It's something that is so logical, but if somebody doesn't point it out, you're not thinking about it. It's just a symbol that we have seen for so long.
Since
it's just
the 60s.
Like the library reading sign too, that you recognize that sign, but it's time to update that sign.
Right. So. There's an article that's listed in the back of this packet that I gave you, or a paper where it's entitled Standards as Social Design Practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about the difference between what the standard icons are and then updating them for the social realities of today. The reality is we don't hide away our disabled people anymore,
right?
They're out and moving forward and about in the community, and we want to reflect that in our signage.
One of the things that really hit me with what you just said is the percentages.
Yes.
Because I know at my yoga studio, there are two parking spots, one on the north end and one on the south end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a small lot, but I wonder why that hasn't caught up. But like you were saying, Lisa, it's almost you bring this up and everybody, the light bulbs all go off.
Yeah, because people don't think about it. It doesn't affect them personally. So even if they know somebody with a disability who's complained about the lack of parking, they haven't experienced it themselves in a visceral way, right? And so the goal is to kind of just bring it to the forefront, educate people. The ADA is 34 years old now. And even as it took so much effort to get it passed, and it's still very minimal in the accommodations that it provides, as well as unenforced. So like I parked in the Grant North parking garage downtown to go to the Art Institute. Someone parked in the lines next to me in that parking garage. I called the police. I said, hey, can we do something about this?
Yeah.
They said, no, it's private property. We can't come there. Like, then what's the point of having the law? Like, well, you can call the garage. I called the garage. He's like, well, if you want to stay there and block the person in so that I can come see that they're, I'm like, so I have to put my physical safety on the line for you to come see. He's like, and then I don't know what I could really do about it. You know, maybe I could write them a note or something. And I'm like, but this is how I need to access my vehicle to leave the parking lot. Well, do you need to leave right now? And I was like,
why does that matter?
Maybe. right. Well, you can wait there for me and I'll come and look. Like, why do I need to wait here for you to enforce the law?
Right.
And he's like, well, there's nothing else I could do. So I called the police back and I said, they said there's nothing he can do. They said, well, you could call 911. And I'm like, why would I have to abuse the city's services in order to enforce the law? But that's the way things are at the moment. And I think that needs to change.
Agreed. Lana, I have to ask an opportunity for you to help me with some language.
Sure.
So we still refer to those parking spaces as handicapped parking spaces.
Right.
What would you like us?
Accessible parking.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Because I know that that's also terminology that I need to work on, you know, with my staff and employees and knowing the right terminology to use.
Yeah. Accessible is always the safest.
Yes.
And then there are people who identify with the term as a disabled person, but a lot of people would much prefer to say a person with a disability.
Yes.
So it is malleable, mm-hmm. person to person, right? Like we all think of ourselves in different ways. But it is important to ask, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Absolutely.
How about talking about how you founded Bolingbrook Pride, how that came about?
Oh, yes. So Bolingbrook Pride came about 2018. Aurora decided they were going to have a Pride parade.
Yes.
And two or three of us online in Bolingbrook Friends and Neighbors, which is a Facebook group, said, oh, they can't beat us. I'm a very competitive person.
Yeah, I can tell.
I don't know if you could tell.
Never would have guessed.
I know. So I was like, So I think we should do this. But we had some back and forth within our own group initially about, well, how do we want to do this? Do we want to kind of guerrilla pride flag a neighborhood? Do we want to do it? And I was like, again, I don't think small, right? I'm like, well, we need to get a 501c3 and we need to, they're like, but we're just a small group. And I'm like, but we don't have to be. Like, I don't understand why we can't like take this larger. And we started in April of 2018. And in the beginning of June, held our first event. We were the first group to do a family picnic as a Pride Fest. And it has spread like wildfire because it works. My idea is non-confrontational acceptance. I think you create advocates by creating experiences where people who are not alike come together and interact and find out organically that we are more alike than we are different. Mm-hmm. So every cause that I do, every advocacy outreach I do is educational in nature. And it is these experiences where people decide for themselves and change their own heart and mind to say, wow, I didn't know I had so much in common, or I didn't know that what I thought was probably incorrect. Challenging preconceptions is what I live for. So it was great. We had over 300 people show up to this first event, and it's called the Bolingbrook Pride Picnic and Puppies. And it's always been from the beginning because we have a dog rescue group who comes and provides puppy cuddles in exchange for donations to the rescue to help them raise money and find supplies and such. Because who doesn't show acceptance better than a dog?
Yeah. And who doesn't want puppy cuddles?
Right?
I mean, seriously.
Yeah. So, yeah, we went from that in 2018. We were derailed a little bit during COVID. We just had our fourth annual. And we had, at this one, 79 vendors and 3 food trucks. And then we have a bounce house and bubbles and DJ and balloon artists and face painting. It's a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
When you sit down to pretty much design, whether it's a graphic or I don't know if you do book covers or anything like that. Yeah. Is there any place you put yourself? I know you're creative because of all the things that we've heard, but what do you do when you first decide to design whatever art that you're producing?
The first thing that I do is interview whoever I'm designing
for.
For me, the greatest joy I have in the design process is connecting with that individual, finding out from them what they want. I love when I create something and I come to them with it and I feel nervous and I'm like, I always feel nervous. Like, is this right? Is this it? And so many times I get, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that was what I wanted. But now that I see it, that's exactly it. You heard me.
Yeah. I used to design flyers and things like that, print material.
Yeah.
And people didn't know what they wanted. But they're so happy when you come up with that connection for them.
Right. And that's what it is for me. It's connection between me and them. It's connecting them with their audience. I, as you can see in this packet in front of you, I am information forward. The whole goal, right, is to attract people to understand what's being expressed to them. And so I love that about graphic design. I love being the tool that creates the document that furthers the cause.
That's wonderful.
So what is your...
Sorry about
no,
that.
No, that's okay. That happens. That just happened to me a minute ago.
Okay.
It's a good thing it wasn't the whole Doctor Who thing.
Me,
you know?
Yes, let me turn off my sound. That would be helpful. Nope, come on. One moment. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
So what was your favorite project? Can you tell us a little story about what your favorite graphic project was?
I was trying to think about that. Prior to coming here, one of my favorite projects ever was the organization that does the anti-vaping, anti-drinking, anti-smoking campaigns for the schools for the state of Illinois contracted out to me to do the anti-vaping and anti-drinking campaigns for the state of Illinois. I got to be so creative in that campaign. But more than that is that I took a risk in that time. I was not very confident in my own abilities to ideate and come up with concepts. And I said, this is what I think we should do. And they were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And they went with my idea. And it was so confidence building for me to be able to produce materials that so aligned with my own personal feelings about how kids should be kept safe from such dangers, but then to do it also in a way where I talked to students and people and got an idea about what they might want to actually look at. So often these items they throw up in the schools, kids don't even, you know, they just gloss over, like,
sure.
It's not done in a way that matters to them. And I wanted to connect with these students and these teenagers and show them that they're being seen. And so that was really exciting for me to do that.
Well, I would imagine, too, because of your experience with being heard at such a young age.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, we've all seen those motivational posters. And can any one of us really quote one?
Right.
You're blinded to it. I mean, especially with something as important as vaping, where it's been made to be innocuous.
Yeah. And it's really scary.
It's awful. I had a person I worked for at one point come up to me and say, oh, somebody left their thumb drive. And I'm like, that's not a thumb drive.
No, not so much.
And this person has children. I said, you need to
be aware.
Notice this.
Yeah.
Because it's going to happen. And I remember when I used to bring my therapy dog to Lewis University and the kids, we were doing outside for a little bit until she got too interested in the chipmunks.
Yeah.
But they would be vaping and she would literally back away and snort.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, if the dog doesn't like it, mm-hmm. I'm not your mom, but pay attention because the dog is telling you this is not cool.
Yeah. There's something in those chemical compounds that is not safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you said you prefer to like hand pick your clients that you work with.
Yes, very much. I like if I'm going to consider doing work for a political candidate, for example, I will talk with that candidate for 2 hours before I decide if that's somebody I want to take on. I firmly believe that we as a society are othering each other and we're sowing fear and hate in a way that is incredibly unhealthy and is creating yes. more division. Mm-hmm. I only support candidates that are willing to reach across the aisle. People who their passion is to actually help people. I have 75 to 80% rate of the candidates that I've designed for getting elected.
Wow.
And so I feel a very strong responsibility to make sure that the people I am helping mm-hmm. are the kind of people that are going to actually move the country forward and bring people together.
Zonta's mission is to make the world a better place for women and girls, which is why we're talking to you, because you are making that better place. We are all trying, and that's kind of the beauty of this podcast, is that we can expose people all over to these ideas, to this energy, and to get people involved and start thinking about what can I do? It's like that saying about being of service is the rent you pay for being here, right?
Oh my gosh, I hadn't heard that. That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah. So how can we, as the Zonta Club, get involved and help?
Well, I think we as humans, first off, like I tell my kids, do what you can with what you have where you are. It's very simple. You don't have to have money. Mm-hmm. You can pick up garbage. You don't have to have the ability to pick up garbage. You can be kind. We practice drive-by complimenting. As you approach someone, look at them, see something that you love about them, and then tell them. Like, the power of that is huge. So these are very small things that we can do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you can also find causes that you believe in. See who around you is actually participating in that. There's lots and lots of organizations that are available that you can just join.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to start your own thing. my kids would sometimes probably prefer that I didn't just start a new organization every time. But I think, like with things like the Accessible Icon Project, for example, like you said, all of a sudden you've seen mm-hmm. the concept. Great. You go, wait a minute. I know that we are going to redo the parking lot, or we're in the middle of that. All you have to do, these stencils are widely available. Say right. to the contractor who's going to paint it, this is what we want. This is the stencil we want. And it's there and it's available nationwide. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's a really easy one.
Many of our Zontians own businesses.
Mm-hmm.
They that have parking true. Lots.
Yeah.
They can do those.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a wonderful mm-hmm. way to engage, again, even on a small scale.
Right. Well, I think that's the beautiful thing. Like, if you do it, you may be a small business, but how many people visit your business
yes,
every
and
year?
And they'll see that.
And they'll see and be like, grows. Wait a minute. What is that? Right. Why is that one different? They might ask the business.
Right.
What's going on with that? And you can even have a little sheet like this that says, this is why we do it. So, stuff like that is incredibly important. It's simple. And I think simple is best. You don't have to do something complicated. It's look for how can I help my neighbor? Mm-hmm. How can I help the school? How can I help in these small ways in the local area those things get magnified. Mm-hmm. Find other people who are passionate about what you're passionate about. Have exciting discussions and come up with ideas. I think too many people are taught that they are small and they don't have a reach in the world, and there's nothing further from the truth. Anybody can go anywhere and do anything. That was the biggest gift my parents gave me. I do not feel less than anyone. I could talk to the president tomorrow and have a conversation, because I know in my heart that we are all humans. Like, we have to look at each other and see that shared humanity. All of the outside, the artifice, the jobs, the education, the wealth, that's extra. We have to look at each other and see each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can work together to do incredible things, and just to not be afraid to reach out to someone who you might perceive is better than you or in power. All they have is more reach and more influence.
Right.
You know,
right.
Send an email, make a phone call, say, I have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing they can say is, no, I'm not interested. Well, then find somebody who is, because somebody will be.
And that's the thing I think we found in our own club, is because the way we're organized, for folks that are maybe new and this is the first podcast they're listening to, which is going to be awesome, is that we are under Zonta International, which does these marvelous, huge projects. And each club also focuses on a local thing. And it's those little drops in the pond, the little pebble that ripples out, where we can make that impact. We started this podcast and half of Zonta, I think, looked at us and went, what? And now people are calling saying, hey, how do we start a podcast?
Right.
So just being willing to kind of stick your neck out a little bit and.
Right. Don't be afraid to be an example.
Yeah.
Like, I think people worry about that. But for me, when I'm doing something that I know is right, someone said to me, will you be my mentor? And I'm like, for what? And they're like, well, you're so brave and you're so bold. And I went, I don't see obstacles, I guess. Like, my husband laughed at me. I said, I'm not ambitious. He's like,
oh, that is funny.
Everybody laughs. And I think it's a matter of perspective. If I was doing these things for myself, mm-hmm. maybe I would feel ambitious. All I feel is motivated. I don't see obstacles. I see problems to be solved, because I can feel the truth of doing good. Mm-hmm. And when you have that on your side, you will find the path. You just have to be persistent. Mm-hmm. And if being a quadriplegic has taught me nothing else, it's taught me fortitude and persistence. And they may have been qualities that I had a little bit in me, but I get the joy of exercising problem solving all day long. And so this is just an extension of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels powerful, to be honest. Like, for those who are wondering, what can I do? I don't have much power. Doing makes you powerful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not hard to see why you won the Bolingbrook Female Citizen of the Year Award in 2021. You are quite an inspiration.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I just want to ask you, are you keeping track of your quotes that you're coming up with? Because I'm thinking this should be a book.
lots of people say that I should write a book.
Yes.
Okay. So there are things that I'm nervous about doing, right? I'm not excited about getting on stage and talking to people. Uh-huh. People have been telling me I should be an inspirational speaker since I was 15. For a long time, in fact, I had such a disconnect. I was in such denial about my disability that seeing a picture or a video of myself was painful and disconcerting. I could mm-hmm. not make the connection.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 2023, I was chosen to be one of the cohort for Backbone's Leader Program.
Mm-hmm.
And we met every month. They only pick 10 people from across the country. Backbones is an incredible organization led by Rebecca Torres. She is a woman with a spinal cord injury. She's been in a wheelchair as long as I have. And they're led by people with spinal cord injuries, and they provide content for people with spinal cord injuries. And one of the things that they do is this leadership program, and they identify people who have qualities that they can nurture to help them make a difference, right? My husband again laughed at me. I thought, oh my gosh, I hope they take me. I hope they take me. I hope they take me. And he's like, you've got to be kidding, right? And but it was so empowering to do that. I connected with myself and my disability in such a way that I'm no longer afraid of being out in front of people or seeing video of myself. I feel much more integrated and capable. And so I'm so grateful to their program. And I'm kind of like trying to find ways, how can I go out and do speaking? I don't like being lectured to. Like, I'm not a person who can sit still in an audience and listen to a half hour speech. I don't want to do that to other people. So I'm like, well, how can I do this? And I'm like, well, maybe I'll come up with workshops or something where I could talk for 5 minutes and then we can actually do. Because I'm much more the doer than the talker. I do like to talk, obviously. But so, and it's like, I'm just trying to work my way towards something like a book. But it is a little nerve-wracking.
Well, you would certainly have access to the cover art.
Yes, exactly. You know. And typesetting the book. Yeah. I'd be comfortable with all of that.
Exactly. Oh, and I'm a copy editor. I got you.
Oh, see?
I'm good.
Like, we're making a plan.
We're planning here.
And I've written a book, so.
Look at that.
I mean, the two of us have been authors, published authors, so you're we got you.
You can do it. Yeah.
We're not like we're pressuring you right now.
It's inevitable. I just got to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, this is just
find the time, maybe. You know?
Well, as what was really great, I believe it was my daughter, Megan, who said something. Someone had said, hey, how does your mom find the time to do that? And she goes, she makes the time.
You make the time for what's important, whether it's coming to a class, whether it's showing up for an event, whether it's deciding to put your energy in a place where you know it's going to have a positive effect. I love when people say, I'm too busy for such and such. And it's like, well, then get out of the way of the people who are busy doing it.
Yes, absolutely. You like, this isn't an issue I have sometimes. It's like, don't talk about it. You can talk about it if you're trying to do something.
Yeah. Right.
If you just want to talk about it, okay, you can go talk over there and I'm going to go work over here.
Right,
I was raised that was just the way it was in my household. You don't you can't complain about the political climate if you don't vote. You can't complain about the way the world is if you're not going to do something.
Right.
So it was just part of the culture in my house.
Yeah.
What's your favorite quote of yours?
Of my own?
Yes.
Besides suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah, it's a good one. Favorite quote. As she looks over at her husband. I think it's you got to do what you got to do because you got to do it.
Yep.
That's good.
That's kind of like the way that it is in her household. And it is what it is. That's pretty much how I live my life. It's like, well, here we are. It is what it is.
Yep.
And if you don't accept where you're at, you can't move forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other one I tell people all the time is you have to admit the suckiness of the situation.
Yes.
Because if you don't embrace that suckiness and go, oh, wow, this is terrible, then you can't identify the places that you need to fix or you can't go forward.
Yeah. This has been such an energizing,
very much so,
podcast. We are so pleased and happy to speak with you. And it's nice to talk to you in person instead of across the keyboard, which we will keep doing because we've connected on so many other activities. But we do appreciate all of your information and we look forward to seeing what you're going to do next. And we look forward to what we're going to be doing because of you.
Oh, thank you. I do have one more thing I could tell you about that I am doing in the next. October 5th, is the Celebration of Special Recreation.
Okay.
This is another one of those events that I've created for experiential change. So I created this in my role as the vice chair of the Arts Council. I am also within that Arts Council, the chair of Accessibility and Art. So we've been doing, we have Zot Arts come in from Michigan. He has created all of these tools so that people with significant disabilities can have access to self-expression.
Oh, wow.
So what we do, though, is we use these tools with glow paint in black light. And so we've been doing that since 2017. Now we've developed it into, this will be our third annual event. We partnered with the Park District and the Special Recreation Association to do a multi-hour event where we have about 15 adaptive recreation activities that are at the Park District building in Bolingbrook. And people come and they can participate in it. Disability, no disability, doesn't matter, but they have to use the adaptive equipment. And
nice.
So this allows children and people without disabilities to play with those with and understand organically, again, that we all have a right to self-expression. We all have a right to recreation. We also have a small vendor fair where all the different recreational activities from around the area can come. And it's a one-stop shop for people to understand that they have a choice.
That is amazing.
Most people with disabilities aren't marketed to in that way. Mm-hmm. They aren't told they have choices. And so the goal is to just to get as many people as possible together and get the message.
That's what Thank I needed you. To. I just wanted to make sure that we were all, you know, you all got introduced to Elena and
Thank
what's
you.
Going on. And we'll be in touch. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Have a great day, everyone. Zonta on the Move is hosted and produced by Bonnie Winfrey, Pat Perrier, and Lisa Pappas. It is engineered and edited by Alex Melkars. Zonta on the Move is recorded in the WCSF studio on the campus of the University of St. Francis in Joliet, Illinois. The views reflected in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the University of St. Francis, WCSF, University Administration, or the Catholic Diocese of Joliet.